No shirt, no shoes, no Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. One Medicare podcast that never fails to satisfy. Ready or not, here he comes, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, it's time for the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast again. I'm so excited. This is your Medicare expert, Doug Jones, bringing you episode number 344 of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, the podcast that tries to make people feel good about that impending transition from Obamacare to Medicare. Thank you very much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure. It's always fun to have an opportunity to spend a few minutes with you. And we try to keep it to a few minutes, and I have to say that we always fail. It is just an unfortunate set of circumstances that caused me to start to free associate. And then, of course, anybody else that participates in the process winds up free associating also. And before you know it, hours have passed. We're going to try not to do that to you today. One of the things that I like to talk about is the fact that this, the content of this podcast is inspired by my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, Simplest and Easiest Guide Ever. The 2022 edition is out at Barnes & Noble and at Amazon.com. At Amazon, you can get a hardcover, you can get a softcover, you can get an Audible book, and you can get a Kindle ebook. So you have a choice. Now, if you get one of my books, and if you read it, and if you found it helpful, I wish you would go leave a review. Nowadays, they have it fixed so that all you have to do is click on a star from 1 to 5. And if you want to leave a few words explaining to people why you thought it was helpful to you, that would be excellent also. But there's one guy who decided to follow me around in every edition of the book. He tries his best to make it look like it's not a very good book. Most of the readers say that it is fantastic. And so he is decidedly outnumbered. But if you can find your way clear to leave a review that indicates your enjoyment of the book, then I would appreciate it, and it would really help future readers because they'll say, hey, let me give it a try because others seem to have liked it. So one other thing I like to do besides introducing the book and the inspiration for this podcast is also play our 30-second radio spot. So I'm going to shut up now and let Randy play that spot.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you very much, Randy. I do appreciate it. And Randy today is sitting in Tombstone, right in the middle of the street, it looks like. I don't know if the publisher of the Tombstone Epitaph is ready to spring into action and find out what's going on out there. Looks like some sort of news is being created down the street behind you. What's going on, Randy?
Well, I am. You're absolutely correct, Doug. I'm standing, actually. I'm in the middle of the main street from Tombstone, Arizona. And for those of you on the podcast who don't know all the details about Tombstone, that I certainly do, one of the things that Tombstone is famous for is the shootout at the OK Corral. And that is an actual spot. The thing I love about Tombstone so much is that it is an actual town. It's not just a movie set. And everything you see there in Tombstone is real, it's actual, and people are still living there. So that's the thing that I really enjoy. And the other thing that's really notable are there's a couple things there, like the Birdcage Lounge. I don't think they called it a lounge then, did they? That's a more modern
tavern
term.
I think it's a Birdcage Tavern, wasn't it?
Yeah, so the Birdcage Tavern.
Or saloon.
Let's call it the saloon. Yeah, I think you're right. The Birdcage Saloon. among other things, is known for having the longest continuously running poker game in the world. There was a poker game, I don't remember the dates, but just, you know, some of you on the podcast can certainly look this up. There was a continuously running poker game. Now, not all the same people, obviously, but the way it worked back in the day was people would pay, you know, they would buy their way into a poker game. And then when they wanted out, they had either lost all their money. So they were out.
or they might have left because of lead poisoning.
Yeah, they could have done that, but it was running for something like 40 years. It was a continuously running poker game. And those of you who are going maybe someday visit Tucson, the
Tombstone.
I said Tucson, didn't I? Tombstone. Yeah, if you're going to visit Tombstone, there's actually the table where this 45-year, 46-year continuously running poker game was held. And all the cards are sitting on the table face down, and the chips were left where they were left at the time the game finally ended.
No kidding. Now, I never knew that, and I've been there several times, so nobody has told me that story. Mostly, I've been very thirsty. I think they take pity on me, you know, hand me a mug of beer, which, you know, blessedly is much colder now than it was back in the 1880s.
Exactly.
Now, let's talk about the importance of Tombstone. It was the largest city in Arizona and pretty much the largest city between St. Louis and San Francisco for a time early in its history. And then something bad happened. What was that? Tell us a little of the history.
Well, let's see. What bad? You mean other than the big shootout?
Well, the shootout wasn't that bad because it brings droves of tourists there every day. I'm talking about the silver mines. The town was founded, and it was a huge boom town because of silver.
Yeah, it was essentially a silver town, and there's still mines there. They've all been. Now, I would have to say, based on my research, that the silver mines are still there, the silver is still there, but they became so costly to mine where the silver was, that plus the fact that they were tunneling underneath Tombstone.
Yeah, well, there was one other little problem they had that occurred in the late 1880s. There was an earthquake in Mexico that caused all the mines to flood.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the mines are like they're completely flooded with groundwater that never had existed until this earthquake caused a fault to open up and expose the mines to groundwater. Now, what they did then was, we can get back in those mines. All we have to do is pump the water out. They kept getting bigger and bigger pumps. And in fact, they had the railroad bring in giant steam-driven pumps with which they thought they could empty the mines, get the water cleared out so they could continue mining silver. No chance. They could not keep up with that water.
That's a great piece of information, because I have read a lot about Tombstone and I have never heard about this. I mean, I knew the mines were flooded, but I didn't know what the cause was.
Yeah, it all happened almost overnight, and just the town withered away for a long time. And then, of course, tourism was discovered when people started driving. So and it's a nice little area of Arizona because it's down near the border. So you can visit the Karchner Caverns in Benson. And you can go to Tombstone, which is not very far away, less than 45 minutes, I would say. And then we stayed overnight in Sierra Vista, which has Fort Huachuca, and they have two museums at Fort Huachuca. Fort Huachuca is the center of Army intelligence, which some people would say is an oxymoron, in the world today. And so the U.S. Army's intelligence is all headquartered there, and they've got a couple of museums that I haven't been to yet, but it's a nice, interesting, and very scenic area. Oh, Bisbee. You're not too far from Bisbee, which has a Copper Queen mine ride. It's almost like a carnival ride. You can go way down. They say it's a couple of thousand feet there. You're going down into the Copper Queen mine. And when we were there one time, we rode down, we got off the tram that they took us in on. And they were telling us about the various mining operations that occurred there. And then there was a huge bang, and instantly the tunnel that we were in filled with dust. And I would have thought it was something that was set up just for us to give us a little flavor of what it's like to work underground, except that the tour guides were climbing over the tourists to get to the tram to get out of the mine first because they were scared to death. And yeah. It turns out it was completely unplanned. Now, later, I found out that same day there was an earthquake up in, up towards Flagstaff, you know, way far away from Bisbee. But nobody ever told me that they made a connection between a rock that fell down a shaft several thousand feet and that earthquake. So I don't know if they ever figured out what happened, but I know that those tour guides were scared to death.
Yes. Yeah. When the tour guides are jumping over the people in the tram, you know, something's wrong. But
yeah,
Bisbee is an interesting little town. There's also a hotel in Bisbee called the Copper Queen.
Right.
And if you guys, anybody out there love, ghost hunting and ghost investigating, the Copper Queen is the place to go in Bisbee.
Yeah,
it's quite the place. And I don't know, whether you like ghosts or whether you don't like ghosts, but depending on which side of the fence you're on, you may find one walking around there at some point. It's not something that's visual, but you can see or not see, but you can smell occasionally. I've been there and I've experienced it. You can smell occasionally cigar smoke, and there's no smoking anymore in the hotel. So, take it as you will.
Yep. Smoking ghosts.
Smoking ghosts.
Did you ever go down in the Copper Queen mine?
I did. And I'm one of these guys that'll try anything twice. Uh-huh. And the tram, as you were talking about, the tram that takes you down in the mine. So just so you people can visualize this, the little tram is like one of those little tiny children's locomotive sort of things.
Yes.
And it is so cut that you go into is so narrow, you can actually reach out and touch both sides of the wall. And when the tram is moving, you have to keep your hands to your sides because otherwise they're going to hit the walls. And they do warn you very carefully before you go in. If any of you all are claustrophobic, leave now.
Yes. And the other interesting thing is you ride through that cut going down, down, down. And then I told you that the tour guides, plural, were panicked when that rock fell down that 1,000-foot shaft. They have one at each end of the tram. And so one, when they get partway down into the mine, they stop the tram and the guy in front opens a steel door. And then they move the tram forward. And this thing is probably, what do you think, 100 feet long, maybe?
Oh, yeah, at least.
And it's a bunch of little cars, like a carnival railroad ride for kids. And so then when it goes through, they stop it again. And the guy on the back car gets off and closes that steel door. I don't know what that's all about. And maybe I should have asked. But then the tram keeps going down into the mine.
You may not want to know.
Oh, okay.
I think it's maybe one of those situations where it's better off you didn't know.
Okay.
But by the time you get down to the bottom of the two, essentially, just so you know, for those people that are claustrophobic or whatever you want to call it, because the cut is essentially going level or maybe a little bit downgrade, but the mountain is getting higher above you while you're doing this.
Okay.
So by the time you get down to the bottom of the cut where you have to come back, you are actually, hang on to your hat, probably many hundreds of people are not going to go now. You are more than a mile underground.
Well, I knew that we were very deep. I didn't realize it was the mountain coming up. I thought it was us going downhill. But I will ask you this. Why the steel door?
I think it's because I have no real idea. But I would guess that the steel door is opened and shut because they do not want, if something were to happen outside, inside, they want it to be sealed. And okay. Hopefully keep you from whatever it was that went on.
An avalanche is what you're talking about.
Yeah, the avalanche. If one part of the tunnel was to crumble, you know, whatever.
Yep.
It would provide some sort of, you know, protection. But the other thing I thought was really interesting is when I went on the ride, the people that were conducting the tour, driving the train, all that stuff, were actually old retired miners.
Absolutely. And there, I don't think there are too many of them anymore. So I think that is going to go by the wayside, very much like the Mystery Castle in Phoenix used to be overseen by the daughter of the guy who built it. And she had a lot of interesting insights about her father. And then it was when she got old and kind of crippled up, then it was her friends that ran it. And she trained those people. And now when you go to the Mystery Castle, the tour guides are younger people that really never had any connection with the original owner or the daughter of the original owner. And so it's a whole different experience. Still interesting. I wouldn't say go away, but I mean, I wouldn't say stay away from it, but it's just not the same as having that connection to the original guy that built it.
No.
Hey, you know something? Go ahead.
We need to do some Medicare work here.
I put my my stopwatch out, but I forgot to start it. So I have no idea how much time we burned up.
We've been Jack-John here for a while, but you know, given the fact that I think people will interest them, I think that history and the local color will interest them, but we probably better do some Medicare because the last time I was in Tombstone, there was absolutely no Medicare to be had that I could see. So we need to really get over to the Medicare side so people can see how they can protect themselves when they're in the Copper Queen, which by the way, isn't in Tombstone. It's in Bisbee,
but you know, and there's a whole history of the Bisbee mining strife. Unionized miners versus non-union and all that. I did want to say that if you'll recall our last episode, I was privy to a stump the audio engineer question that I asked Randy, and he failed miserably. He fell flat on his face, and it had to do with the founders of an organization called the International Silver String Submarine Band. And I asked Randy what that was all about, and he had no idea. So since Dominic Regina was kind enough to give me this stump Randy question, I was able to say it was a Little Rascals movie, one of the Little Rascals shorts. And members of the band included the Little Rascals, Stymie, Butch, and Spanky, and I'm sure Alfalfa and some of the other ones. And the song they played, I asked Randy, and according to Dominic, it was the Daring Young Man and the Flying Trapeze. But I did a little more research. And if you wanted to watch that particular episode of Little Rascals, that would be Mike Fright. And what they did was the gang decided they wanted to be in some kind of a play or some entertainment show. And so they showed up for an audition. And apparently there were a lot of other acts that went on to entertain the audience during that audition. But the episode entitled Mike Fright is indicative of the fact that apparently some of those were better than others. So I just wanted to pass that along too. I forgot to mention that when we did the Stump the Audio Engineer. Okay. Now I've got a bunch of articles that we didn't get to last time because Randy forced me to concentrate on one particular article illustrating the problems that some people have with Medicare Advantage plans. And he always loves, he's like a little kid. He jumps up and down in his chair and he claps and he says, more, more, I want more. So we're not going to do that today because frankly, why beat a dead horse? So I've got an article with a series of headlines that I've highlighted here. This is from Kaiser Health News, which I've been led to believe is a very dependable, factually accurate publication that concentrates on events in the health insurance and health care industries. So this article is just about a month old. It came out in April, middle of April in 2022. It has been extra busy on the health policy beat lately, so a congressional recess provides a chance to explore some of the important stories that people might have missed, like Medicare's decision to dramatically limit coverage of Aduhelm, the controversial new drug to treat Alzheimer's disease. The whole thing is that was one of the primary reasons that the CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the government department that cannot spell its own acronym correctly, those idiots, they also increase the deductibles, the costs, and all the cost sharing associated with Medicare to a much higher degree than normal last fall. And their excuse for doing that was that they were preparing to pay for Aduhelm, for this Alzheimer's drug, to be covered by Medicare. And they said, we're going to need extra cash flow in order to cover the cost of this drug. Pretty expensive drug, I guess. However, what did they decide to do? Drastically limit the availability of that drug to those participating in studies only, not general distribution. So why don't they go back and lower the cost of Medicare? Why don't they reduce the excessive increases in monthly premium and deductibles and so forth? Well, who knows? I guess it's because the public isn't requesting that they act more responsibly. So right now, we have been saddled with increases based on an excuse. The excuse has been removed, but the increases have not been removed. Other things in this article, let's see, the decision by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Once again, they can't figure out how to properly spell their acronym. They spell it CMS. It should be CMMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Their decision to limit the coverage of Aduhelm to only beneficiaries who enroll in clinical studies of the new drug came despite intense pressure from patients and advocacy groups who are frustrated by the lack of new therapies for this devastating disease. But the federal agency also appears to have been swayed by arguments by some researchers and public health experts that the earlier research on the drug was faulty. And the next item, the dust-up over Medicare coverage for this Aduhelm drug, points to a source of tension in the U.S. health system. Different government agencies have overlapping authorities. This dispute is between the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which approved the drug despite serious questions about its effectiveness and safety, and CMS, once again, the government department made up of people who cannot figure out how to properly spell their acronym. CMS is the outfit that oversees Medicare, and it's part of the Social Security Administration. They had to decide whether to cover the cost of the very controversial drug that is also very expensive. But similar tensions have also played out between the FDA and the Centers for Disease Control, otherwise known as MASC Central, and COVID-19 vaccine schedules and eligibility. A recent Bloomberg report looked at the concerns that the federal government is overpaying for beneficiaries enrolled. Oh, this will make Randy's heart go pitter-patter. A recent Bloomberg report looked at concerns that the federal government is overpaying for beneficiaries enrolled in private Medicare Advantage plans. More progressive Democratic members of Congress have long complained about this, but Republicans are strong supporters of the Medicare Advantage system. There's something upside down and backwards about that, because the plans that we promote and the plans that I sell, Medicare supplement plans, offer complete freedom of choice, reasonable cost, excellent protection against the devastation of high medical bills. Those are the plans that my Republican colleagues, I can't call them colleagues because I'm not an elected official, but those are the people, or those are the plans that my government should be supporting. And it turns out that the Democrats, the party I would least like to affiliate myself with, are fighting the good fight against the Medicare Advantage plan. So, just goes to show you, as I said last time, the enemy of my enemy can be my friend. And another highlighted area here is, despite the complaints of some on the left about the excess funding of these medical plans, they have been growing. That is, in part, because the traditional Medicare program has many holes and cost-sharing responsibilities that people with modest incomes are nervous about shouldering, and Medicare Advantage has become attractive to them. That has complicated the formerly partisan politics over the program. Well, let me explain quickly what this means. The Medicare Advantage plans that many people are signing up for have very low monthly premium costs, and they throw in a few extras to entice people to enroll. But two things happen. First of all, people often are disappointed after they're on the plan for a while because the terms of the plan or the networks of doctors and hospitals that they're forced to use can often change. Contracts expire and are not renewed. And so if you had a doctor that was in the network, the doctor's the plan will maybe no longer pay for that doctor if his contract has expired and if he has his hospital has terminated their relationship with the plan. They do often have some other little gewgaws and doodads, like some limited dental insurance. But once again, often they have dental networks that are limited, and so they can't include payment for every dentist that you could go to, and you might have to leave your family dentist if you want to take advantage of that part of the plan. So there's opportunity for big disappointment after you've been on the plan, and they give you an opportunity to shop for a new Medicare Advantage plan every year. Unfortunately, once you've been on a Medicare Advantage plan for a year, you are not guaranteed the right to get a Medicare supplement plan anymore. For most companies in most states, you're going to have to fill out a health questionnaire in order to be able to qualify for a Medicare supplement plan. So the Medicare Advantage plans are taking over. Oh, the other thing is, if you get sick under a Medicare Advantage plan, you need surgery, you have to do a hospital stay, they will sock it to you with a multi-$1,000 out-of-pocket limit. In some cases, it can be as much as $7,500 that the federal government allows them to charge as your out-of-pocket limit if you have a bunch of expenses under a Medicare Advantage plan. Under a Medicare supplement plan, no such thing exists. You got to pay a few bucks every month, but no exposure to a radically high annual out-of-pocket limit exists with a Medicare supplement plan. So I marked two other things. The CDC released new data showing a rise in 2020 in the number of cases of gonorrhea and syphilis, likely the product of less access to healthcare during the early stages of the coronavirus panic. Although the diseases can easily be cured with antibiotics, the public may not realize the need to seek medical care or the devastating consequences of letting the disease go untreated. The CDC also reported that drug overdose deaths reached a new record high last year. That would have been 2021. That's it. Just one little sentence about drug overdose deaths, but I think like three sentences about gonorrhea and syphilis. So that's just a collection of little short factoids. How are we doing time-wise today, Randy? We spent so much time down in Tombstone, it may be all gone. Huh?
Well, you know, we are pretty well out of time, but I did want to mention that I have a couple questions, and I think they fall into the category of stump the insurance expert.
Ouch. Okay.
But I know I think you're going to know the answer to these.
Well, that'll be refreshing. That's going to be shocking to the audience. I'll tell you right now.
Okay. Number one, how can you tell a politician is lying?
Is it because his lips are moving?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. That's the answer.
I got one right. Yay.
Okay. Now, this might be a little more difficult, but what is the new avenue that our government is looking for to follow for another pandemic?
Oh boy, I call it panic. And my daughter, who visited us last week, calls it the plandemic.
And, okay, well, I'll go for the plandemic. Yeah.
So now, what avenue? I would have to say it's monkeypox. Is that possible?
Monkeypox, absolutely. Yeah. You got it.
Now,
you are just hot today.
I am. It's one of those rare days when I'm right on. The Babylon Bee has a list of 10 reasons that you can use to diagnose, you know, whether or not you have monkeypox or is it something else. And one of those reasons was that you think you might have it. If you think you might have it, that's close enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing I was going to tell you is that I've I'm a monkeypox expert now because I've been reading about it over the weekend, and most of the images that they're using to display how disgustingly terrible monkeypox is, you know, the big boils and blisters and all that stuff.
Sure.
That's not monkeypox at all.
And what is that?
I forget what it's actually a stock picture was depicting some other disease.
So we're not being lied to, are we? Is that possible?
No, it just so happens that the picture's identical, same hand, same blisters, same position. And so instead of that, apparently the government is so carefully trying to protect us that they didn't have time to go and take an actual monkeypox picture. They used the monkeypox pictures they had on hand.
And so what they're going to be doing basically is saying, if you don't want to look like this, and we don't really know what it is because it's a stock picture of something or other, then start wearing a mask, stay home, socially distance yourself, and on and on and on. Close your business. Don't go out.
Close your business. Yeah.
Hide from your relatives and friends.
Yep. Now, the other thing, I know that you know the answer to this, but some people on the podcast may not. The reason that I always say the way you can tell if a politician is lying is their sound coming out of their mouth and their lips are moving.
Yeah.
Do you remember, now I know you weren't born yet, but do you remember in your historical studies why the income tax was originally placed on the American public and what it was supposed to solve?
Well, thank you, Randy, for acknowledging the fact that I wasn't alive in 1913 when the income tax was passed. I don't know what temporary problem it was supposed to solve, and I'll be interested in finding that out. But I know that on our telephone bills for our landlines that we paid in Illinois to AT&T included a surcharge. It wasn't real large, but it included a surcharge to fund the Spanish-American War.
Yeah, that's always handy. And absolutely, you're still paying it. You're still paying it, right?
Well, we won the war, so why not? I mean, I'm happy. If we had lost, we'd be speaking Spanish and we wouldn't have that surcharge now. I will say that my father's father was a member of the United States Cavalry in the Spanish-American War. And then he came back to Oklahoma and became a lawyer. I don't know that he ever went to law school. I don't know how many law schools there were in those days. But then what happened? The First World War came along. So he became a captain in the infantry in the First World War. No horses for him. But anyway, just a little aside about the Spanish-American War and the surcharge that, for all I know, is still on our telephone bills.
Probably so. Well, my understanding is, and I'll have to check to see which exact war it was, but my understanding is that the income tax was originally levied on the American public as a temporary measure to pay war debts. And I don't know whether it was the Civil War or which one it was, but that was the original reason, was to pay war debts.
Well, you know something? I just think I might have misspoken because I might have said 2013. It was 1913 when the income tax was assessed. It was a very benign tax with a limit, and it only applied to the upper echelon of income tax earners, and it was not painful at all. But they have used that tax as like a lever for behavior modification and to encourage the things that the government thinks are worthy activities and to discourage the things that the government thinks are unworthy activities. And it's just become a giant political football, as we all know.
Well, the other thing that I'm always interested to educate people about, you know, all the shenanigans our government pulls. And the other one is when a politician tells you they're looking to lower taxes.
You know what they
really mean?
I don't know.
They're not attempting to lower taxes. They're attempting to delay the increases.
Oh, there you go. Well, I'll tell you,
that's entirely two different things.
One political party lately has been screaming about paying their fair share. Well, unfortunately, the tax burden falls unfairly upon those who are most successful, and that doesn't encourage them to continue their success and provide work for others.
Exactly. Exactly. So anyway, I was just feeling particularly gritty this morning about, you know, politicians. I think everybody should have a politician's head on the mantle or on a pike outside of their door.
Well, the good news for those of us who enjoy your pontifications is that you're nowhere in need or nowhere close to being in need of Aduhelm. I think your brain is working perfectly. So let's at least be grateful for that, shall we?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have had probably a little bit overtime here. I think we're probably playing overtime, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm sure we are, but I don't know for sure. My stopwatch is not running.
Well, since we probably need to, you know, finish the game, even though it's in overtime, and you guys that are listening have definitely won, because if you get yourself a Medicare supplemental plan and talk to Doug Jones, the expert in the entire process, you've won anyway, whether it was in overtime or not. So anyway, we have probably going to need to close down shop here. We're out of gas, we're out of time, and we're out of a lot of things. So anyway, thank you for joining us very much. We enjoy it every time you do. You could have been 1,000 different places, and you weren't. You were here listening to us on the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And you have just spent, as you might notice, about 32 and a half minutes or a little more today with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, living in his fortress of solitude, originally from Oklahoma, but the fortress of solitude is located high up in the mountains of Cave Creek, Arizona, watching over the town to make sure nothing bad happens.
Goodbye, everyone.